Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Today I have Donald Jeffries back on the show. If you're not familiar with Donald's work, you should be. I've already interviewed him on his books, his excellent book, Hidden History, Survival of the Richest, a few times, and we're getting back to that today. So I'm really happy to have Donald back with me. Good morning, Donald.
Morning, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I was thinking about your book last night, and I said, I wonder if he needs to write an update since when you first wrote this book about all the facts and figures that I'm sure have gotten worse.
Oh, I can't keep up with them. Yeah, you know, just one of my talking points that I've used so much is when people talk about slavery, for instance, just in that period of time, they were reporting for a long time that 30 million slaves were in the world today. It's now, I read a mainstream report last month, I had to update my talking points, it's up to 40 million.
So apparently,
I mean, I don't know, how do we have 10 million more slaves? I don't know how we have any slaves in the world, but that's the kind of stuff, I think, and if things continue eventually, I think, as I said, I think that's what the people that rule things really want. I think the 1% would like to have probably even more exclusive 1% and have the rest of us all be slaves if they could.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's the purpose behind Agenda 21 and Agenda, 2030? You know, rich against everybody else. You know, you're looking at all these immigrants now being thrown into immediately. We obviously have money to immediately build concentration camps, but not to help Puerto Rico. And where are these people going to end up? To me, that's more slave labor.
Oh, exactly. And that's I was reading today an update, and I was shocked. And again, this is why, you know me, Maria, I really fall outside this left-right paradigm, and I hate it, but just looking at today, you remember in Hidden History, I had a section on there in Rex 84, which, of course, happened during the Reagan administration. And for years, all good conspiracy theorists, so-called, in good standing, were worried about this Rex 84 agenda and what it represented, because it represented the concentration camps, and we were all scared, wow, you know, maybe we're going to find ourselves one day. Well, now they're coming out. I read a report today. They're publicly saying they're going to use the Rex 84 camps to house the immigrants. And a lot of people thought that would be maybe how it started, but I mean, it's, and of course, again, Trump's followers are so deluded that no one is pointing out that, wait a minute, you're the same guys that used to complain about Rex 84, and now you're okay with it because Trump's doing it. So we live in awful times, and it's, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's interesting. Like, as I said before, if this was a science fiction movie, it'd be great to watch, but to
right.
live in it is
Living
so
in
fun.
It is a nightmare. I mean, yeah. I have, like, post-traumatic stress disorder since Trump took office.
Yeah, well, he's become, you know, I get so sick of Trump because I don't know if you've read, but I keep calling him Goldstein. To me, he's very much like Goldstein was in Orwell's 1984, because, you know, if you remember, that was the so-called opposition. That was the one, you know, that this guy's going to save us. This is the opposition to Big Brother. And, of course, you know, as it turned out, he was ultimately not even real, which Trump, I don't know. He's not real either, but he was, Goldstein incited what they called the two-minute hate every day from the party members. And I think, you know, ultimately Trump is trotted out there like a bad guy in WWE, and he elicits more than a two-minute hate. It's like continuous hate, because Goldstein's picture would just show up on the screen and he'd just talk and people would just go crazy. That's what Trump is becoming. He's like the ultimate lightning rod, and it's almost impossible to talk about any political issue now because he's in the middle of everything. He's like
I know. I know, he has to comment on everything. Right, he has to comment on everything. Late night host, Roseanne, Sarah Sanders getting kicked, not allowed in the restaurant. Today he was taking on Harley Davidson. He was threatening Harley Davidson today.
Because they were, right. For a long time, they were one of the few companies left that was making something in America. But when they go, of course, and that's the way the system works. If you're with us, we support anything you do. I mean, you know, when you can support Rex 84 camps, I don't care who you're putting in there. You know, if you wanted to put, people that believe that, if you want to put Henry Kissinger in the 1% in Rex 84 camps, I'd have doubts about that. I mean, I just don't think we need concentration camps, but they built them for some reason, so apparently they're going to use them now.
Well, you know, when they talked about these FEMA camps and converting Walmarts into FEMA camps, well, people thought that was crazy until now you see that a lot of these kids are being held in Walmarts and FEMA camps. Then they want to put them on military bases, which means the press can't get in. And you have to wonder what's going to happen, you know. And then today, the Supreme Court of Injustice decided to vote for his Muslim ban. So now the Muslims will get demonized here. And on top of that, he wants to eliminate due process for the immigrants, which means eventually there'll be no due process for people like you and me.
Yeah, well, he's already alluded to that. You remember, it's a few times when he upset his supporters, but then they quickly came back. But one of the times when he was basically talking about guns, said, let's take the guns and then worry about due. So I think that's Trump's personality. He really doesn't understand the law or care about it, I guess. And that's obviously the scary thing about it. But yeah, certainly we all.
Right. But you got to look at Congress. You know, what's Congress doing to stop him? You know, they just voted for this $700 billion increase for the Pentagon, both parties. And we get back to, you know, one party of the rich, which people still don't understand. I mean, if the Democrats were worth anything, why aren't they fighting tooth and nail on everything he's doing?
No, and they do. What they do is they're fighting him the way the so-called liberal media does in the talk show host. They're just reporting and they're oh my God, and calling him names and calling him a liar and just that kind of stuff. But it's over his absurd, personality things where his name calling and his juvenile tactics, but it's nothing. They're not criticizing him about bombing Syria. They're not criticizing him. They're criticizing him about the Muslim ban just because they all want more immigration because they want more cheaper labor, but they're not criticizing it as how it impacts our terrible foreign policy, which consists largely of killing Muslims everywhere we can. So, they don't extrapolate into that because most of the left was very happy when he bombed Syria, and I don't hear a whole lot of them getting upset at his constant rhetoric against Iran, which I also read today, by the way. Iran, you think of a third world, has a better, disparity of wealth than the United States does. So that's something for everybody to contemplate while we're lecturing them.
Right. Well, you know, yesterday the market dropped, I believe, 500 points. I didn't look at it today. And people just say, well, these are just normal fluctuations of the market. They're not making any connection to the jobs fleeing the country or, you know, the fact that we don't even have, people to pick our produce in the fields anymore. We don't have anybody cutting our meat in slaughterhouses. The fisheries have no workers. I mean, when are Americans going to wake up and realize this was the worst possible thing that could have ever happened to us?
Well, the shocking part about the job statistics are, one of the many. I mean, you remember, I gave Trump credit for saying lots and lots of really radical things, along with a lot of stupid things when he was campaigning.
Right.
He appears to have forgotten it all. But one of the really great things he said was he called out the fake unemployment rate at the time, and he was exactly right. They only count people who are presently getting unemployment benefits. But since he's come in office, much as the Republicans that ran on term limits back in 94, as soon as they got in, suddenly, we don't need them now that we're here. It's the same kind of thing now. But now that he's in there, if the fake unemployment rate is dropping, he's promoting it nonstop and bragging about it. And nobody calls him on that. That's what I'd like to see our so-called liberal press do. Well, Mr. President, on this date, you talked about the unemployment rate probably being 40% or whatever because it's based on fake statistics. Has things changed since you've been in office? But they don't do that.
No, they don't. Well, when they do try to ask him a question, he literally, I've seen him tell one reporter to shut up, stop talking.
Sure.
So, here we have no civility from a president, but he expects civility for his Nazi party if they go out to a restaurant and people boo them.
Well, we've become, you know, we talk about the idiocracy. I mean, this guy, Trump, is as close as we're going to get probably to a President Camacho, which is what they had in Idiocracy.
Right.
He's done, if he was younger and in better shape, he might be just like President Camacho. I mean, I could almost see him physically, you know, getting into altercations with people, but it's that level.
Well, he encourages it. He encourages it. One of his psycho fans in Kentucky, I think he was campaigning last week. He's still campaigning. Yeah. I think Jim Acosta was there from CNN, and she told him, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And they all turned on him. So, I mean, how can people not see that we're moving rapidly into fascism under a tyrant and a lunatic tyrant?
We're also moving into what, you know, we are. The idiocracy is all but built, and it's here now. It's just that the Idiocracy, the movie, conveniently ignored the people at the top, the corruption, the people, they just kind of assumed it was just incredibly stupid people that had been dumbed down and running things. Well, no, there are people at the top that are smarter and that are manipulating all this, but the idiocracy level stuff, and Trump is perfect for that, and I think they hit on the perfect character they could find who just...
Oh, yeah, the biggest uninformed lunatic.
Love him. They half the people love, or not maybe not half, but a hardcore love him because of the fact that there was so much undeniable corruption and wrong out there, and he promised to drain the swamp. And the fact, I mean, I keep arguing with his supporters all the time. I mean, is he ever going to name a single outsider there? But they'll defend John Bolton. They'll defend him because they're just betrothed to this guy. Well, you know, you have to keep your friends, friends close and your enemies closer, and all that nonsense. And then the other half, of course, probably even a larger group, is just naturally repelled by this abrasive personality of his, the absurd toupee, just the way he talks, and the kind of inarticulate New York street style he has.
Yeah, he went totally off the rails crazy at his last campaign rally. I don't know, anybody watching him could think that this man doesn't need to be on medication. And I'm not one that promotes medication, but man, I don't think there's enough pills in Big Pharma for this guy to calm his ass down. I mean, I'm from New York. I don't talk like him. Do you know what I mean?
The saddest thing of all this, and the thing I really, not only the fact that Trump has polluted all the entire political debate, because now it's messy. It's, for somebody like me who, you know, is kind of, I'm trying to just ignore it as much as I can and try to, you know, concentrate on things beyond those cultural issues that get people so riled up. I'm trying to talk about the disparity of wealth and the massive corruption and the nonstop wars, but people become so distracted because of all the stupid theatrics,
right,
the tweeting and all that stuff. And because he's there, what really irks me is that he's made it next to impossible for a real outsider that uses some of that good populist rhetoric and hopefully better that he did. Because
right.
Now anybody that comes in running with that stuff that says, you know, we need to take care of America first and build our infrastructure, they're going to instantly compare him to Trump. Oh, yeah, last thing we need is another Trump. And I think he has polluted that independent base for a long time, because I don't know when we could ever get a real independent. The system doesn't allow it, but we're just broken down.
No, and I'm sure you saw the Democrats passed a bill saying that if Bernie Sanders wants to run again, he has to run on a Democratic ticket. They still don't want a third, fourth, fifth party running.
So we get stuck with
the same crap over and over, but this is the ultimate. I've never seen anything like it.
The worst part is, Maria, is that no matter how far Trump goes, no matter what, like I said, he literally probably could get into a physical fight with a supporter. It doesn't matter how far he goes, because I predict that the Democrats will, I mean, not that they have any good candidates anyhow. I mean, Bernie Sanders is not an attractive candidate, but he was like the most radical one they would allow in a long time, and that's why he caught so much fire. Imagine if Cynthia McKinney was allowed to run, or Dennis Kucinich.
They pushed both of them out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and they did, but if we're left to this career, corrupt career, Obama lover, Kamala Harris, or Joe Biden, Hillary again, what?
Oh, no, anything but her. Actually, I happen to like Joe Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, well, possibly.
I like Ted Lieu. I think Ted Lieu is great.
Yeah, I don't know that much about them, but if they go with the kind of candidate I think they'll go with.
Right.
I think Trump has, no matter what he does, I think he has a good chance of being reelected because I think...
Oh, God, no. I can't handle another 4 years. I would literally have to move out of the country if we're allowed to at that point.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think they want, you know, I don't know if they're trying to... If they want a civil war, I don't know. And that this is why this guy was chosen. I don't know.
Well, two things. You know, first of all, the producer of Idiocracy has been interviewed recently, and he said that he did not intend for the movie to become basically, you know, reality, a documentary. It was supposed to be a comedy.
Exactly. Especially 500 years. I think it was set 500 years in the future. So
yeah, well, the future is now.
Yeah, we're moving at a very, very rapid pace, and it's just a shame because the last thing, and I think that's what has really hurt someone like me that's trying to talk about, you know, income disparity,
right,
is that gets lost in the shuffle because people are just ready to go to battle over, you know, a wedding cake for a gay couple or Sarah
right.
being served at a restaurant. That's where the lines are being drawn.
Well, and Trump is encouraging it. You saw how he took on Maxine Waters, gave her pretty much an open threat. You better watch what you say.
Sure.
And then today a guy got arrested for threatening Maxine Waters. He said, say one more word, you're going to be dead. So he riles this up, him and social media both.
If I find a saying that, you know, I was raised a Democrat, and I was a liberal Democrat until I really became awake and realized that party had left me and became an independent. But in my heart, I still have more love for the Democratic Party. But if they just went back to if they just drop the contentious, because I'm thoroughly convinced that probably no one outside the top 20%, 80% of the people would never vote for the Republicans, because the Republicans are telling them, yeah, we don't want a living wage. We don't, you know, we're not going to do this. They're telling them right up front, we're not going to do, you know, we want to cut Social Security. We want to cut all these. We don't want food stamps, anything like that. They're telling the poor and the working class, we're going to do absolutely nothing for you. But because of the social justice warrior stuff, they hate those poor and working class hate that so much.
Right.
Because that's all they're hearing from the Democratic Party candidate. If you had a Cynthia McKinney, a black woman up there, who would get the base just that.
I voted for her.
The stuff she talks about, she'd get 75% of the vote, I think.
Absolutely. Hey, when she ran, I voted for her.
So, I did too.
I was proud to interview her on my show. But when you look at what, you know, what we keep getting offered, I mean, come on, there was no worse choice than 2016. Hillary, she should never show her face again. And Trump, I was like, oh, God, cancer or AIDS, which one will you choose? You know what I mean? I hope to God they don't roll her out again. I did want to mention to you, the United Nations came out with a report on the poverty in America, which, of course, pissed off Nikki Haley. So she's like, who are they to talk about poverty in America? But why doesn't she go back to India or Israel? I'm happy with her in Israel. But the UN actually said there were 18.5 million Americans living in extreme poverty. The Trump administration said there are only 250,000.
Must have a wildly varying definition of poverty, I'm guessing. Well, it's like the definition is middle class. I was looking up today trying to see if I could find any updated news on this subject, you know, before the interview, but I found just an incredible stat that I didn't include in the book because I didn't know it, but and it goes along with pretty much everything I'm saying, but it's now acknowledged that, for instance, as recently as the 1970s, 70% of Americans grew up in a middle-class household.
Mm-hmm.
Now, less than 40% do.
God.
Now you just think about that. In 40 years, the middle class is gone. It doesn't exist, and that's what made America great. If they want to go make America great again, restore the middle class, and restore the ability for the poor to rise to the middle class. But
no
one's doing that.
It's like something out of, I forget which Mel Brooks movie it was, where he was the king. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember.
You remember where one of the lines he used throughout the movie was, it's good to be king, fuck the poor?
Yeah, well, you know, that could be, I mean, if Trump adopted that, someone like a Trump adopted that campaign slogan, I don't think he'd lose any support. I really
no, well, his supporters, his supporters are now considered a cult. Look how many Republicans are leaving the party saying it's now the party of Trump. There's no recognition to it being close to. Remember what the Republican Party was under, Eisenhower, other presidents, it was all about the middle class. It was all about, helping people out, safety nets, whatnot.
Right. Well, both parties used to love the middle class, but and recognize that that's what made America different.
You had that chance. I tell people all the time, when I was a kid, you had everything right in front of you. And I mean, listen, we were dirt poor, okay? My father was a barber supporting a family of seven. It wasn't like we were rolling in dough. I went to school in hand-me-downs. But I knew, and I believed the myth, if you work hard, you can move ahead in America. So I studied hard. I got good jobs. I kept doing better and better, getting my raises, saved up enough money to buy my first house, to buy my first car. Your bosses were loyal to you. I mean, I worked in some places, one job for 13 years.
Yeah.
But when I look at my grandchildren, not so much my kids, but I look at my grandchildren who are in their early 20s, there's no opportunity out there. Outside of being an entrepreneur or selling drugs, what opportunity is there for these kids? And they know it.
My kids are in their 20s too, and I'm seeing it in the young people that I know. It's again, there are a few, a very small minority of them are doing really well, already making six figures.
Right.
But the vast majority of them are not only mired in these low-paying jobs, if they have a job, many of them still living with their parents. I think it's 20-some percent of the millennial or the young adults that are 37 to 40 or something are still living at home with their parents. It's an incredible stat, but that's because of economic necessity. And instead of shaming them for living in their mother's basement, well, they have to.
Right.
They make it so that you have affordable housing, but because we don't have housing, because the rent out there is so expensive, and as somebody who's been selling real estate for a long time like me, I try to tell other realtors, and again, they don't want to really hear that either because they're not recognizing the big picture either, but homeownership is such a wonderful part of them. It's the way most of us.
Right. I mean, even Bush Jr., wanted every American to own their own home. All right, so they created all their exotic mortgages and crashed the whole global financial structure.
but
at least people had a shot. Now I'm reading with these tariffs, most of the home building in this country, we get our wood from Canada. So now they're saying because of the tariffs Canada did hit for tat, and who blames them, the cost of housing is going to go up and less people will be able to afford to buy a home.
Right. It's all, again, tied into the one issue that I think is the most important issue in the country, and that is that the vast majority of workers, if they're lucky enough to have a job, are not being paid enough to meet the ever-increasing cost of living. And that's what it is. Salaries and wages have to go up because everything else is going up, regardless what happens with the tariffs or anything else.
Right.
Nothing's going down.
Of course not. Listen, I was in the insurance business for 23 years, and one thing I knew when I was 17 starting working in the insurance business and watching them over the past, 50 years since, insurance premiums always go up and the coverage comes down.
Yeah.
Okay, but people's salaries certainly don't rise to that occasion. Now we're going to have a food shortage because nobody's picking our food, so the price of food's going to go up. And at the same time, the Christian administration, and I use the word Christian tongue-in-cheek, wants to cut food stamps, and our veterans and our servicemen are going to lose on food stamps.
So what do they want?
Do they want everybody to just starve to death? Is that the Christian nation we are? Is that part of MAGA, MAGA, MAGA?
I think that, as long as... The person that either if they're doing okay, as long as, and that's, we've become such a selfish country.
Right, greed, American greed. Right, I got mine, and the hell with you. Listen,
yeah,
I'll give you an example.
Step over the bum on the corner. I mean, that's there. Maybe step on him.
Right.
That's what we either don't see those people, or if we do, we call the police on them just for, why are you there? You're there. And instead of understanding that the fact that they are there is really an indictment. of our society.
Absolutely.
Because, they're there because of the fact there aren't enough jobs. The jobs that are largely don't pay enough. Housing is not affordable anywhere. You talk about when you were young, when I was young, any parent, any father, and mothers didn't have to work. Most mothers really didn't.
Yeah, right. My mother was home. I had a stay-at-home mother. I mean, that would have been like an anathema if your mother went to work.
Yeah, exactly. It really was. That part of the Leave It to Beaver world was correct. At least with my mother, when I got off the school bus, she was there at the door for me. If I wanted milk and cookies, I could have that. And that was a good feeling. And
right.
I think that, it really gave you a sense of security, regardless of how much your father made. My dad was a dental supply salesman. He didn't make much, but we lived a lower middle class life. We had a single family home, and we didn't really want for anything. And I think that's what people are missing today. Because today, if you have when I was married in '85, my wife and I both had very not high paid jobs at all, but I was able to save enough money. We were able to buy a little townhouse for $71,000 in our area.
Mm.
And, it was little. It was right next to the railroad tracks, only had 1.5 baths. That same townhouse today, and of course, then later, I was, 13 years there with the equity that was built. That's the way the system's supposed to work. I could move into a single family home. Now I've built up a lot of equity in the single family home, and that's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way the American dream worked for so many people. You bought your house, the market continued to grow, presumably your income, but even if your income wasn't growing as much, that home represented a great value for you, and you could do so many things with it. You could use the equity to buy cars and things like that, and a lot of people do that. But now that same townhouse, and there's so many others like it, are good starter homes for young couples that are first starting out. Probably $250,000 to $300,000.
Yeah, you might even be wet. You might want to look at Zillow because they'll tell you a story. Like you, when I bought my first house, it was 1979. And it was because my neighborhood had really crashed. It became a welfare dumping state in Long Beach, New York at the time. So I was able to get a house, a Cape Cod house, a block from the beach for $29,000 with $1,000 down. Okay, I looked at that house on Zillow last year. Same house. They didn't do anything to it. It's not like they expanded it or did anything. Zillow had it listed for $675,000.
Sure.
So talk about inflation, okay? That's a good example.
What happens is, Maria, something. Now, I don't know how that house looks. It may not be as – the point I was going to start to make about like a lot of these older townhouses like that is that no one, even though lots of young people would be happy to live in those places, the problem is none of them make enough money to qualify for it, even with the low interest rates we have. And the few that do make enough money are going to turn their nose up at it because they want something better and they can get something better. Now, your house, that your example may be a little bit different because it's close to the beach. But again, how many young people can afford a $675,000?
They can't. We moved out of there because we couldn't afford the taxes. But the house I bought right after that I paid $125,000 for in '85, is also at $685,000. So, you look at that and you say, where's the American dream, But I will tell you this, with all this deregulation, getting rid of the Dodd-Frank bill, bringing back exotic mortgages. I'm telling everybody that couldn't get a mortgage these past few years, file now while you can. They're going to crash the market again. You might as well get one.
Oh, yeah. And as a good realtor, I try to tell everybody, especially with the rents as high as they are, you're much better off buying if you possibly can. But again, a lot of people, even with the creative mortgages and stuff, they just don't have enough income. And a lot of times their parents can help them. But a lot of the parents, unfortunately, a lot of the baby boomers are very selfish. A lot of them don't help their children. Some of them do. But a lot of them won't, whatever. And if they don't, then they don't have a chance in that.
You got to get to a lot of baby boomers now, like myself. We're starting to get concerned saying, how are we going to survive if we stop working? Okay, I know I can't survive if I stop working. My Social Security is a joke. Okay, it would barely even cover my mortgage, let alone anything else. But I had a real-time example of what you said a little earlier about American greed, and it just happened to me yesterday, so I want to share the story with you. I wake up in the morning. Mondays have not been good to me this month, okay? I wake up in the morning, get in my shower, I have no hot water. I call my plumber, who's a really nice guy, and I tell him. He's here in 5 minutes, which is a miracle by itself, okay?
Yeah.
And he tells me, you know, to replace the hot water heater, and he had to do some, you know, take down some shelves. It's in a really weird space. He gives me a price of $1,100, okay? Now, he said to me, because the new phone books were delivered at the same time, and he shows me the plumber on the back of the book. He says, this guy would charge you $2,600. And let me tell you what's happening with plumbers in America. He said they're all going to these kind of long weekend courses to learn how to overbill people and get these higher prices. And they are. And then we got into the discussion, you know, that these people don't have a conscience, American greed, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, to me, even though, you know, it's one of my friends says, oh, that sounds high. I said, listen, the guy's entitled to make a living. You know, I want a licensed plumber in my house, and I've used him before, and I know he's a decent human being. But, you know, I've heard the same story from my dentist. My dentist told me that most of the work in this country now, when you go in to get a crown or whatever, they send that stuff to China to save money. So those crowns that are coming back in your mouth are made in China, and God knows with what. You know, and he prides himself on using a local guy. Okay, it takes 3 weeks to get the crown, but what's the hurry? Do you know what I mean? So there's like no limit to American greed. And these people are, they're taking courses in how to rip off their neighbors. And yet they want to call us a Christian nation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really is unconscionable what you see out there. But that's why, if somebody is trying to, you know, kind of straddle the left and right, I'm far left on those issues. But I've always been very... even on the issues I'm kind of on the right on, I've never trusted the corporate world. I never understood why people do, because the only possible control we have over these kind of excesses that you're talking about, and unfair labor practices, has always been government. As bad as our government is, because our leaders are so terrible, at least we have some.
But we don't have that anymore with Mick Mulvaney just got rid of the Consumer Protection Bureau. I mean, we have nothing. We have nowhere to turn now.
Yeah, well, consumer, consumer. I mean, you know, nobody. I mean, they act like they're not consumers. It's just. This is where the first place, and it's why the right and the left are both so bad, because the right. As you know, the whole thrust of survival of the richest is to try to show people where all the real welfare is, where all the real perks are, the real entitlements that all go to the richest people. But they have the people distracted, and it's that same base that loves Trump. Look at what your neighbor, look at the welfare queen, and how much money you're getting on food stamps. That's what I'm not paying my money so that some lazy bum doesn't work.
Most of the counties that voted for Trump are the ones that are on most of the social welfare programs.
Sure.
They find out that that's gone, I doubt they're going to turn on him. But I think once they do turn on him, it's going to be like something right out of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, I know people that are on disability that have complained about people on disability. If you didn't have this, how would you be living? But it's because they, in their mind, they're entitled to it.
Right. I got mine, and the hell with you. That's like the American creed.
But that guy, you know, he's not really disabled. How are you really disabled? you've scrutinized it. You know, probably a lot of people aren't. But again, if you eliminated that, and there's lots of people I know that are on disability, and yeah, some of them are questionable, but if you took all those people off and you threw them out into the marketplace, they all have varying mental, emotional, or physical issues, so you're going to throw them out there with the other 94 to 100 million of American adults that have worked to compete for these awful jobs.
Right.
And their families aren't going to take them in, because we know American families treat each other, they'd rather take in a stray cat or a rabid dog than a lot of times family members.
Well, you know, the breakdown of the American family was a big part of what's happening today, too. You know, so, I mean, we could talk about that forever. Donna, we need to take a short break, but before I do, I just wanted to say this. Everything we're talking about is exactly the reason that I have become your biggest soapbox fan and continually post your book on my page, continually post and tell people about your book, and tell people that if everybody in this country, fans of Trump or not, read this book, they would know where to take the fight and stop killing each other over stupid stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I just wanted to say that. If you're going to read one book in the next 10 years, this is the book you need to read. All right, we're going to break now. We'll be right back.
She's been called Paula Revere, the mother of the internet and even a legend. The mouth that roars, roars all truth without any input from corporate, religious, or political affiliations. Maria's in it just like you are. Often imitated, but never duplicated. Commercial-free talk providing a real education in a world filled with lies, cover-ups, and propaganda. Subscribe now and encourage your friends to do the same. Feel good about supporting real media that supports you and all life on this planet. Pick a subscription of your choice and get started on the journey down the rabbit hole. If you are financially challenged or a senior on a limited income, please send an email to maria@maria.net and she will work something out for you. There's never been a more dangerous or exciting time to be alive. Education is a necessity now. Stay informed. Subscribe today at www.meria.net.
Okay, welcome back to the show with my excellent co-host, Donald Jeffries. Survival of the Richest, How the Corruption of the Marketplace and Disparity of Wealth Created the Greatest Conspiracy of All. You know, Donald, I never talk about anybody's book the way I talk about this one. The last writer I ever talked about like this was Dave McGowan. And, you know, Dave, one of his first books, you know, 20 years ago, was Understanding the F Word, you know, Fascism in America. And everybody laughed and everybody said he was crazy. And here we are in fascist America. So when your book, you know, if everybody could read this book and stop fighting over the hot button issues that Trump throws at us every day and said, wait a minute, this is where we need to be protesting. You know, right now they're protesting outside a lot of these Nazis' homes, like Stephen Miller and the woman with DHS and whatnot. That's a good start, but it's still not all the right people. It reminds me of those protests they did on Wall Street, which then, of course, got infiltrated, so that went away. At least they were taking it to the banks where it needed to be.
Yeah.
You know, look, right now we have this whole immigrant bullshit coming out of, and I read a great article and I totally agree with it. I think everything going on with this administration right now and Trump's fans is their anxiety over white extinction in America.
Well, there's, you know, I think that there's, and again, I think it turns on to, I talk a lot about, like, what real liberals, even as recently as the 1960s, like Bob Dylan, certainly, I love Dylan.
My granddaughter loves him, too.
Only a pawn in their game. If the white working class would listen to that, unless it was, because I mean, he talks about it there, because these are the people you're talking about white extinction, because those are real concerns, because I believe the white race meets every criteria for an endangered species, because they're, and I think I read the other day that white deaths outnumber births, I think for the first time in history.
I reported that.
Yeah, and it's based on reality, so there are those fears there.
But maybe it's a good thing, okay? You know, Malcolm X said that the white man is the devil. Wherever he goes, he creates murder and mayhem, and I can't disagree. Who invaded this country? Who invaded, you know, who invaded Canada? Why are we still invading the dark continents, you know?
There's no doubt about that. We, you know, that our leaders who have been white have certainly done some awful things, but I think that kind of fear, and I think that's what happens with immigrants. I believe that's why the immigration crisis was allowed to get to the point that it has, is because that kind of fractionalization was the people at the top that are above these Republicans and Democrats. I think that's what they wanted, because if you put a bunch of different colored people that have a different look about them, and especially if you, most people think that the Hispanics have become, we basically imported, like when I graduated from high school in 1974, the word Hispanic, well, I never heard of it.
I never did either. I used to say, is there a new country called Hispania? Then I found out there is a place called Hispania.
but since that time, basically, I think it took 30 years where, basically from going to virtually not an existence in the population, they become our largest minority group, and they're growing incredibly fast. They've surpassed blacks. So when you have that kind of demographic change, and what's interesting about that is that when they came across, they're not the ones that are printing up bilingual signs and bilingual ballots and all. That's all being done by white leaders. They're doing that on purpose because they don't want them to learn English for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And that, of course, what does that cause? Speak English. Speak up. That. So that's the reaction.
Right.
You
talk
get from
down
that
to them. Right. Well, you know, I had a good report yesterday. You know, Stephen Miller, the Nazi, who, you know, yeah. he supposedly is the one that penned this horrific policy of separating
the Jewish
kids.
Nazi,
right.
Yeah.
He's a Jewish Nazi. God, you live long enough, you could see anything. But when his great grandmother came to this country, she didn't speak English. And years later, she still didn't speak English. She was still speaking Yiddish. But, you know, these people hide their heritage and their background. I'm trying to think who the number one person in that article was, and it, God, I just reported it yesterday. John Kelly has the same skeleton in his closet. And another one of them, whose great-grandfather was listed as ignorant as a reason not to let him immigrate. Trump's grandfather, he tried to get back into Germany. Germany didn't want him. And the reason they left Germany, I believe it was his father or his grandfather, it's hard to remember, was to avoid the draft. And we all know that Trump did the same thing. He avoided the draft several times, and yet he's president. But let's get to the economics of it. From what I understand, immigrants pay, whether they're legal or illegal, $7 billion in taxes to our country every year. Amazon, General Electric, NRA, Donald Trump himself pay no taxes.
Yeah.
So who should we be deporting here?
Yeah, well, I posted a video. You can go to my Facebook page, and everybody. I think it's a couple years old, but it was actually Amazon UK, but I'm sure things are the same way in America and all over the world. And it was kind of an undercover video of how things go. And they have the kind of workplace that I don't think Charles Dickens could have made up. It's astonishing, and everybody, because this is a company that's run by what we're told is the richest man in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to see how they treat their employees, and the fact they pay no taxes, as you mentioned, again, if people again lost, that's where the, because no one, who can debate that, Maria? Nobody. If you say, but the problem is if you start talking about immigration or any of these hotbed issues where people are going to get fired up on each side, and they're mainly cultural issues. That's why. But something like Amazon not paying taxes, nobody can. They may try to get back to something else. Yeah, my name is on food stamps, but when you try to educate them, as I do, look, I don't know. For the entire food stamp program is pennies compared to what you're paying in corporate welfare. But they can't, because Amazon, Walmart, these big one percenters, for some reason the lower classes, the poor and the working class, they just don't mind the 1% for some reason. I really don't know why.
Because they believe the old myth that anybody can become just like them.
Yeah,
you too can.
They'll be in that. Yeah,
right.
You too
can become a millionaire. Remember that? You too can become a millionaire.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, I've never known a real one. I mean, I guess I theoretically know some 1%ers, because I think the 1% starts at like $250,000 a year or something, but They're not the real 1%. You know, they're probably
look at those corporations that you just mentioned that don't pay taxes, yet they were the biggest receivers of Trump's tax giveaway, which he now wants to pass along to us by cutting Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, everything.
Yeah, and how do you cut Amazon's taxes when they're already not paying any? I mean, it's nice to cut the corporate tax rate if it helps small business.
Right.
But something tells me that
let alone government subsidies to these big manufacturers and the big food producers.
Yeah, they're coming out ahead. I mean, it's amazing to see. But like I've never known anybody in the 1%. But everybody, when I before Survival of the Richest was published, this was a favorite topic of mine. You know, it was always popular at parties, believe me, to talk about the redistribution of wealth and touting Huey Long. I mean, I'm always out there on the fringes, but people would invariably, I had never met anybody that wouldn't argue, like, as if they thought, trust with me, like, look, I'm not Huey Long, I'm not anybody, I can't do this, you know, I don't have a share, I can't confiscate anybody's wealth. But they look at it as like, it's you're after their wealth. They invariably say something like, I worked hard for everything I have. I said, well, nobody's coming after you. There's no tax distribution plan, no wealth distribution plan I could devise, Huey Long could have devised, that would come after your wealth. Because basically you don't have anything.
Right.
We're talking about the 1%, but that's how they react. They're not even looking at the tax-free foundations and all that stuff where all the wealth is. Instead, they react as if you're coming after their wealth. Well, what's your definition of risk? Anybody that's, that has more money than you, I guess. It's like, that's the argument I get every time I talk about it.
No, God. Well, it's because people are ignorant and they want to defend the defenseless, you know. But to me, I'd rather live in a form of democratic socialism where everybody's needs are met than in a country where I have to see people by the thousands living in tent cities on the streets of California, New York, anywhere.
Yeah, well, we have to address it some way because we have, as you mentioned, the tent cities, and I posted videos of Orange County, California. It used to be one of the richest counties in the United States, but you look at it now and parts of it have that real third world look that is we're seeing everywhere in America.
Well, but then Orange County wants to make it illegal for people to sleep on the streets overnight. Well, where are those people supposed to go?
Exactly. Where are they supposed to go?
And people don't realize when they're ragging on these other people that the most Americans, probably the majority, are only one paycheck away from being on the street themselves.
Absolutely, and then they'll wake up when it's too late. But and then you'll realize what it's like to be shunned and treated like that. But the problem is this is the way nobody sees the big picture. So many people, my age especially, and certainly your age, are lost in even as recently as the 80s or even the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The situation has changed so much. It isn't easy to get a job now. Jobs don't.
No, and jobs suck. They pay nothing. Look at St. Louis or St. Louis, depending on where you grew up in the country. In 2017, they reduced the minimum wage from $10 to $7.70. You know, some other state just did this or put forth a bill to do this. This week, I reported on my show, but I couldn't find my own story. So that's my latest that I had Googled. I mean, it's a fact that no one on minimum wage can afford rent in this country anywhere.
And the rights response to that, and I believe it. I research. I go to these conspiracy forums, and I see so many of the right wing people that I used to love when Obama was in office. They were right on with their criticism, but now they're just blinded by the Trump loyalty.
No, I know, and I criticized Obama plenty. So when people start ragging on me, especially on Facebook, I tell them, you know, you have no respect for the work I've done. You don't know the work I've done. And if you're going to keep throwing that shit up, you're going to get blocked immediately.
Well, you have to criticize. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, I certainly take a backseat to no one in my criticism of Obama. But as a human being,
Obama was heads above what we have now in office.
Well, he had just a much... his personality was obviously, how much of that is contrived by all of them, I don't know. But certainly,
he wasn't responding to every bad. He wasn't responding to every slam or every nasty meme against him or any of that.
I don't think anybody ever has before. Trump is something completely new. No one has never seen anything like this. But the guy practically. It's almost like there's a dark corner of the White House somewhere where he just never sleeps and he's always there in front of. If he's doing it himself.
You always know it's his because there's always spelling errors in what he puts out.
Yeah.
I mean, like that one teacher he sent a letter to or put out, and she corrected it and sent it back to him. Well, you know, what about a solution? I'm sure you've been paying attention to all the strikes going on across the country, especially the teacher strikes, which even here in Arizona, they thought it would never happen, but it did. And the governor had to cave. Do we need to get back to like the 1920s when people were, you know, civil disobedience ruled, where you take over factories until you get what you want?
Yeah, I think our politicians are completely hopeless because obviously the right, the Republicans who run things now, are certainly not going to be. They want to, you know, eliminate minimum wage and things like that, and the Democrats are toothless. There's a few of them, but the Democrats that we have in there. You don't have the good ones anymore like Cynthia McKinney or Dennis Kucinich. I mean, Marcy Kaptur, I think, is still in there. She's pretty good. But there's so few of them. And if they just concentrated on these issues, but they get lost because once they start talking about race and gender and all that stuff, you're losing so much potential support that's out there. If you just concentrate on the poverty and don't say, because, you know, black poverty is no different than white poverty. It doesn't matter. It's poverty
right.
We're concerned, but we're talking about the poor. We're talking about awful injustice. The same thing with police brutality. When you
right.
talk about what's going on out there,
it's
the police are out of control.
It's another
just,
right. It's another topic I first covered 18 years ago, which was class warfare.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's class warfare. We have a caste system in this country, and it's getting worse.
It is. And we can extend this to any area. When people talk about prison, well, when you talk about prison, we already imprisoned more people than any country ever has in the history of the world, but almost all the people imprisoned are poor.
Right.
That's what prisons are for. There's no, and so to even talk about it, when you're talking about, okay, what are we going to do? Is this another place to house the poor? Because that's what, but I don't hear the Maxine Waters and people like that talking about, instead of worrying about what Trump's saying, whatever stupid thing he's saying, why aren't they concentrating, hey, let's overturn three strikes, you're out, and the mandatory minimum sentences, which resulted in tons and tons of new black prisoners who really hadn't done anything,
right?
But they're now in prison. I don't hear anybody talking about
that. No, of course not, because they're not black, okay? And that's the problem. People do not understand, even when we go back to when we talked about eliminating due process, sooner or later they're coming for you. And it doesn't matter if you're poor, white, black, Hispanic, yellow, red, pink, purple. Doesn't matter. This is class warfare. It's the rich against everyone else. And, you know, until people understand that, you know, that was, God, I think that was a great book, Class Warfare. I don't even remember the author. It might have been Charles Kelly. It was my early years, and I don't know why suddenly I'm remembering all the books that I read the first year or two on this show, but another one was The World is a Ghetto by Harold Wynett, where he talked, I mean, it was a thick book, it's still appropriate, maybe more than ever, about the war against the darker races that's been going on forever on this planet.
Sure. Well, yeah, you know, eugenicism, certainly you have eugenicists who talk, who've made some ridiculous comments, but again, it's because they're ostensible, and I think that's what I think the reason why the left doesn't criticize the Jeff Bezos is because he says all the right things in their mind. He seems to be a social justice warrior. So,
but what if he was black? Would people still love him?
Well, I'm talking about people on the left. So I think as long as they, it's the same thing with Bill Gates. Bill Gates, he sounds like a good liberal. He does great philanthropic. We don't know what his foundation does.
He goes around giving out his poison vaccines to eugenicize dark nations. That's what he does.
Exactly. He wants to vaccinate Africa so bad.
Right. Right. So it goes right back to, you know, the world is a ghetto. And when you look at this, you know, when I read that article, I think it was in the New York Times, and it was really about, you know, the white extinction anxiety. And listen, I grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I lived in New York the first 40 years of my life, okay? New York, you can't afford to be prejudiced because everybody's different, okay?
Right.
And when I see the way that black people have been treated through my travels, especially through the South, I think the biggest fear of the Trump cult is that black people will treat them the way white people have treated them all their lives.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's the reason why I talk so much about Huey Long. Huey Long is and really Cynthia McKinney is kind of the black version of Huey Long in many ways. Because if you read what...
Oh, yeah, he was a hero.
Cynthia McKinney, she goes right over the... She talks about it, but she does it in the way I would talk about it. So it always resonates with me, but she looks at the big picture always. She's seeing what's really going on, and that's why Huey Long, I searched the record, and I could not find any statement ever made by him that could remotely be considered racist. And this was a Southern politician in the 1930s.
Right.
And that's what was so great about him is that all he concentrated on was class. He talked about the class warfare. It was, and that's why he's still beloved to this day by all the poor in Louisiana, black and white, because he was for them. And that's, we need somebody like that can go, if you just simply point it out and all the distractions and talk about, you know, look, 70% of American households used to be middle class. Now it's less than 40%. 50% of America makes less than $27,000 a year, less than 1% of collective wealth. So if 50% clearly is nowhere ever near middle class, that's half your country you're ruling out to begin with. So where is that middle class? But if you talk about that stuff and no one's doing it, then I think most people, it would resonate because you're not pointing fingers at this group or that group and saying, yeah, but if only we did that to them, if only we silenced them, then everything would be okay. You know, they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't be able to do this and that. And if we just did that, then I'd feel better about myself, because you wouldn't, because if you, you can tear down all the Confederate statues you want.
Right.
And it's not going to, that's not making a single black person make any more money or making them less rent.
Exactly.
And but that's the kind of distractions we get. The same thing with the, you know, if you cut off every big, you know, your imaginary or real big fat black welfare queen that the picture conjures up in most people's minds, if you got rid of all their food stamps and everything, it's not going to make you're not going to notice your paycheck any different. So it's
right.
That's the kind of stuff we need to talk about. Look, this is, they right. have us divided by groups, and that's, I think that's the reason why.
Right, and I believe it's deliberate. It's the old, you know, keep us fighting each other while they rob us blind. You know, when you look at the tax cut, everybody was promised $4,000 more in their pay. I asked last week on my show, if any of you ever saw that $4,000, let me know. You know? So, you know, people believe the bullshit because it's easier than doing the homework. And if we're going to go be a nation run by personality, I mean, we're in deep caca.
Yeah, that's where we got people rooting for personalities, loving and hating personalities. And it's, as you mentioned, the chapter on my book on Survival of the Rich is where I talk about the kind of perks and entitlements that our leaders, our so-called representatives, we have no representation. We have taxation, but we fought a whole revolution over that. You can't get any starker than the banker bailout, when 90-some% of every poll showed people were against it, yet our leaders voted for it. And we see that over and over again. They vote in the interest. If you have affluence, you have influence.
Right.
We don't have any influence over them, and apparently we can't vote them out, because voting fraud or not, 96% of them or so are returned to office every election. So they're just a...
Right. Well, if you ever read the book Vote Scam by the Collier Brothers in the 70s?
Oh, yes, yes.
That's one of my favorites, and I remember what they said. You can't vote the bastards out because you didn't vote the bastards in. And there you go. That's the only explanation of why they keep their jobs.
Yeah, so. They're awful. I mean, who would vote in these people? They're just terrible. And
I know.
There aren't any, you know, great tenured representatives that are, you know, I don't know, John C. Calhoun or Daniel Webster, whoever you had in the past.
Oh,
who knows if they're any good? But I mean, you think of them as like these distinguished statesmen, but there's certainly, I mean, there's nobody in our Congress that's like that.
Well, Donald, I wouldn't even get to touch the chapter in your book I wanted to, so I'm getting you back on the show. Maybe I'll make you a regular on my show. But listen, you're hearing the voice of true patriots, people that do the homework, people that know what our country was supposed to stand for, what our laws are, and giving you the warnings. You know, nobody told Paul Revere to worry about his decorum, okay? He got on his horse and rode. So support the people that are actually waking you up and doing the homework for you, which I know my listeners do, so I'm very grateful for that. Donald, thank you so much, and we'll surely do this again.
Anytime, Maria. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Donald Jeffries, check out Survival of the Richest. You can buy it right here, okay? Buy 10. Give them away. You want to do something good to change the world? This is it. Anyway, thanks for listening and supporting the show. I'll see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active. Or get radioactive. Subscribe today.